So why do most new cars look like just boxes and bubbles? To try to find out, I had lunch with two car designers who teach car design, Blair Taylor and Tisha Johnson. They're at the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, where I've been teaching and poking around the last few months. The school, which started in 1930, offered one of the earliest degrees in automotive design. I asked Taylor and Johnson why car design seems to have changed so little in the last 20 years or so.
This is something that we talk a lot about in terms of car design. There have been so many restrictions, and so if you're using the same types of materials, plastics, and vehicles, and you're starting to put those plastics in more and more places, you're going to see the same types of radiuses, the same types of shapes, because of the restrictions of how those things can be created.
Yeah. But is that most of it, or is the kind of Detroit groupthink idea also part of the problem?
No, I think it's more legislative and aerodynamics.
Really?
Yeah. I'll argue that, though. Yeah.
Legislation, though, I mean, the pedestrian impact, it put 100 mil above any engine that's produced just for to protect your head when you get hit.
Safety. Yeah. Safety.
So let me back
and
up.
Those radiuses are a lot to do with it, so they don't
cut
your leg in half. It just sort of bends it and maybe breaks it, but it doesn't kill you. So it's cost and internal safety within the company.
Internal safety, you mean covering your ass?
Yes.
Oh. Not safety as we are thinking of crashes.
Well, they figure out a way to do something, and they know it works, and there's reliability, and that's what the customers expect.
You know, if you look at what people find beautiful, we have these certain proportional things that we value. So that is translated across time in automotive design. In any form of design that has history, you're going to see proportions that will come up time and time again because they just feel good.
Yes, but
at.
Then I go, as I have, to this, you know, car shows and rallies and things, and I see cars that I really find beautiful from the 30s and 40s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that when you look at the past of car design, extraordinary beautiful things broke through the process more frequently than they have in the last.
That could be true. I think also that all the ugly cars disappeared.
Well, that's true, right. That's part of it.
And we'll have the same thing happening during these.
But then I think there's other new, as we were talking about, kind of new opportunities that come up because technology's also finally kind of meeting up to the idea so that we're able to use manufacturing technologies that just weren't available to us.
And now you can have very personalized vehicles in smaller numbers.
Instead of the big three, there are the big one or two and then the little 10.
The legacy of what's holding back Detroit, with for every one employee, there's two retirees, that's huge. And so these independent designs that are being created, Aptera, Tesla, Henrik Fisker's new enterprise, your balance sheet's looking more like Asian balance sheets or European balance sheets. So it makes a big difference.
And folks that are on their own, that are working with, sometimes less influence from the group.
The heritage.
Then you're going to get different things that are going to come up as a result.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Car designers and teachers Tisha Johnson and Blair Taylor of Art Center College of Design. Down the hall, some students have an assignment, sponsored by Ford. They're designing vehicles that are supposed to have big interior space and good aerodynamics. Well, better late than never.
Well, my name is Ben Messmer, and I'm a car designer at Art Center College of Design, studying transportation. I'm in my sixth term. It's a lifelong ambition.
Really? Lifelong?
Lifelong. I mean, as long as I can remember when I was a little boy, I wanted to become a car designer. For a man, I think a car is very analogous to fashion for a woman. You know, my dad got me started driving cars really early, and, you know, we would drive around the parking lot, and that was always the highlight of my week when he would take me to a big parking lot and kind of very sternly instruct me on how to get going and park the car. And I started drawing cars when I was seven.
Hello, my name is Lily Malikian, and I am designing a project for Ford, which is called the Ford Dwell. I wanted to design an actual kind of a sustainable SUV, because I feel that Ford is very American, and American people still love their SUVs. So I tried to design an aerodynamic SUV.
It doesn't look like an SUV at all. Looks like a cool, you know, kind of chunky sedan.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's got kind of like the SUV spirit, but at the same time, it's very functional. The seats kind of just fold away into a storage space in the interior, and you are left with this kind of a dwell space, as I call it, where you can just exist in your car.
So as people are thrown out of their homes, they can live in your car, I guess. And then I suppose aerodynamically, trying to reduce the drag in order to get better gas mileage is part of what you're thinking about as well.
Yes, quite so. And I think that's just become a really big concern for us in the last couple of years because of the fuel shortage.
Right.
But I feel that it should have been a consideration from the get-go. So we're trying to play catch-up in this industry.
So what if the vehicle itself became the housing? And what if the vehicle itself allowed you to have a point A to points infinite relationship with the world around you?
So you live under this vision in an urban environment, but your vehicle can be your kind of mobile second home.
Absolutely. It could be your mobile second home. It could be your base camp for surfing or snowboarding, or your crash pad for hanging out on the weekend with your friends. And this is something I did interviews with a few people who currently have old Volkswagen campers, because I see the cultures as being connected. And in all these interviews, one of the funniest things that came up was that almost everybody that I interviewed bought the vehicle first for surfing, have taken their families on adventures in the vehicle, and then thirdly, so many people said that it's also a type of insurance of last resort. If anything terrible happens, God forbid, then having a vehicle that allows you to be completely mobile and self-sufficient, especially one that would integrate renewable energy, something with solar power, something that uses wind power and turbines, collects rainwater.
So sort of a green Mad Max hypothetical.
Exactly. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. You got it.
You've now been in Southern California, the great center of American car culture, learning how to design cars. Has that affected your whole sort of notion of cars and the life of the automobile?
Absolutely. I thought I lived with cars and loved cars, but I had no idea how much people in SoCal love their cars. I mean, there's such a huge amount of time that people learn to live in their cars here in California, and the entire landscape has been shaped by cars, and I love it, being a car designer.
You can see a video of those students designing their cars, or maybe we should call them small, efficient, stylish mobile homes, at studio360.org. And while you're there, you can subscribe to the free weekly podcast of Studio 360. Driving around L.A. with urban historian Jim Hyman in increasingly heavy traffic, even on a weekend, I wondered if a city built for the automobile could sustain itself without more sustainable car design.
There'll always be room for creativity. I think you just, you know, the car companies just have to think in terms of, you know, what's being done on maybe the school level.
I wonder if they're smart enough to kind of learn from the ground. I mean, to let some of this DIY, do-it-yourself, culture rise up into corporate automobile design.
Yeah, they do to a certain point. They're always going to car shows and looking. I mean, their design teams will always be looking towards schools. They'll always be looking towards, you know, this vernacular aspect of car design. You're not going to get a lowrider version of, you know, a Ford pickup truck. The future is being much more niche-oriented. The survival could be
and
that,
having,
you know,
smaller runs. That you, if you sell 50,000 cars, it's a good thing.
You know, maybe that's wherein lies the future of, you know, cars and car design.
Well, the thing is, for all of the... Wow, there's a big
gas
station.
Yeah, this is another one of our new gas stations.
United Oil?
On this corner of La Brea and Slauson, we have a brand new 2-month-old gas station that is reflecting what the future of gas stations might look like.
Well, and it's reflecting... It's this sort of silver swooping horseshoe, essentially, is the main form. It could have been in the 1965 World's Fair.
And this definitely is, you know, this is an ode to Los Angeles car culture, because the architect Stephen Kanner is responsible for this, as well as the In-N-Out hamburger in Westwood. And he's very, very conscious and very aware of what California car culture is all about.
Oh, and so the semicircle is actually functional.
It's, yes, the ramp.
You drive that, in and get your car washed.
The ramp that turns into the canopy of the gas station is actually the
That's
ramp that
brilliant.
Goes to the car wash.
That's great. I love L.A.
There's great stuff all over L.A. Yeah. You just have to get in your car and find it.
Jim Hyman is the author of California Crazy and several other books on car culture. There's an interactive map of some of the places we visited on our L.A. driving tour at studio360.org.